Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcasts, or it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, France 24, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. The Japanese Prime Minister was visited by a Chinese Central Committee official to accelerate cooperation through dialogue. The topics discussed were the Taiwan Strait and the dumping of radioactive wastewater from the Fukushima nuclear power plant into the Pacific Ocean. The United Nations criticized North Korea for a failed satellite launch and missile test this week. North Korea sent balloons with trash and excrement into the South as retaliation for propaganda-laden balloons sent from the South last week. Iran is preparing for a presidential election next month. At a press conference, Antony Blinken was asked about how the U.S. felt about their weapons being used for attacks inside Russia. Chinese President Xi reaffirmed support for independent Palestinian state and promised more aid for Gaza. NHK Japan.
Japan's Prime Minister Kishida Fumio has received a courtesy call from senior Chinese official Liu Jinchao. Kishida expressed his desire to make headway through dialogue toward resolving pending issues and concerns. Liu heads the International Department of the Chinese Communist Party's Central Committee. He's in Japan at the invitation of the main ruling Liberal Democratic Party and its junior coalition partner, Kuomintang. Kishida said he wants to accelerate cooperation through dialogue under the mutually beneficial relationship based on common strategic interests. The Prime Minister also stressed the importance of inter-party exchanges to improve Japan-China relations. Liu responded by saying he's committed to enhancing bilateral dialogue. The International Department of the Chinese Communist Party said Liu conveyed to Kishida the importance of maintaining stability in the Taiwan Strait. He said this is in the interest of both countries, and Japan should abide by Beijing's One China principle. Liu also reportedly referred to the discharge of treated and diluted water from Japan's Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant into the ocean. He described the water as nuclear contaminated and said such sensitive issues should be properly addressed. The nuclear plant suffered a triple meltdown during the 2011 earthquake and tsunami. Water used to cool molten fuel at the plant has been mixing with rain and groundwater. The accumulated water is being treated to remove most radioactive substances, but still contains tritium. Before releasing the treated water into the ocean, the plant's operator dilutes it to reduce tritium levels to about 1/7 of the World Health Organization's guidance level for drinking water. The United Nations is criticizing North Korea after its fourth launch of a military reconnaissance satellite Monday failed. The UN chief says the attempt violated Security Council resolutions. The launch likely used ballistic missile technology. If so, it would have violated UN resolutions. Guterres demanded North Korea end its nuclear and missile development programs. He also touched on the military cooperation between Moscow and Pyongyang. Guterres urged Russia not to import weapons from North Korea. Such imports are also banned by UN Security Council resolutions, a group Russia itself is a part of. North Korea has sent balloons filled with trash and excrement over the border to its southern neighbor. It comes after activists in South Korea sent balloons north with anti-Pyongyang leaflets inside. South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff said the balloons started arriving Tuesday night. It says they were detected in areas near the border and even in the capital, Seoul. Footage shows plastic bags attached to the balloons and trash scattered on the ground. South Korea's military says the bags also contained excrement. So far, about 260 balloons have been found. South Korea demanded Pyongyang stop, saying the balloons could impact air and road transportation. Earlier this month, North Korean defectors flew their own balloons over the border. They carried flyers critical of leader Kim Jong-un. Kim's younger sister, Kim Yo-jong, said in a statement released on Wednesday, the balloon was a countermeasure, and sarcastically said they were wholehearted gifts for South Koreans who cry for freedom of speech. Iran has been thrust into a presidential election after the death of President Ebrahim Raisi. The election to be held next month is expected to have a major impact on the political climate in the Middle East. Raisi died in a helicopter crash on May 19th, along with seven others. The conservative hardliner was seen as a potential successor to Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Raisi's death has triggered a race between other hardliners vying for the presidency. Candidates have to be cleared by a 12-member conservative body known as the Guardian Council. It's not clear whether the group will allow reformists onto the ballot. The list will be revealed on June 11th. Under Raisi's leadership, Iran became more involved in the Middle East through proxy groups like Hamas in the Gaza Strip. Iran's relationship with the United States and Europe deteriorated. This is in contrast to his predecessor, former President Hassan Rouhani, who favored closer ties with the West and signed a nuclear deal with six countries, including the U.S. The election to choose the next president is scheduled for June 28th.
We begin with an update that could impact the war in Ukraine. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken was asked about American weapons being supplied to Ukrainian forces. He would not deny the possibility the U.S. may allow Kyiv to use those weapons to strike targets inside Russia. Blinken was speaking to reporters during a visit to Moldova on Wednesday. He says the U.S. has neither encouraged nor enabled strikes outside Ukraine. But he says the country should make its own decisions on how best to defend itself. There have been growing calls among some Western countries to lift part of the restrictions on use of their weapons as Russia intensifies its offensive in eastern Ukraine. Blinken also discussed the situation in the Gaza Strip. He called on Israel to reconsider how it carries out strikes against Hamas, as civilians in the southern city of Rafah get caught in the crossfire. Israeli operations have continued even after the International Court of Justice ordered Israel to halt its offensive in Rafah. 15 people were killed on Wednesday, including three children, when airstrikes hit a house. That comes after at least 45 people were killed when Israeli forces struck a tent camp on Sunday. Blinken says Israel should review its strategy, given how its targets are so closely embedded with civilians. Blinken also stressed the importance of a post-war plan for Gaza. He says a clear path forward can help ensure Hamas stays down after it's defeated. That comes as Israel's national security advisor says the conflict could stretch on until the end of the year. Tzahi Hanegbi told the local media it's expected to take another 7 months to dismantle Hamas. Fighting has also resumed in northern Gaza, where the Israeli military previously said it had taken control. Gaza health authorities say the death toll in the enclave has surpassed 36,000 since the conflict began in October.
In China, President Xi Jinping has reaffirmed his country's support for the establishment of an independent Palestinian state and promised more aid for Gaza.
War cannot continue indefinitely. Justice cannot be permanently absent. And the two-state solution cannot be arbitrarily wavered.
She spoke Thursday at a ministerial meeting of the China-Arab States Cooperation Forum in Beijing. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi and United Arab Emirates President Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan were among the participants. She pledged about $69 million in additional aid to help ease Gaza's humanitarian crisis and support its post-conflict reconstruction. He also said China wants to strengthen cooperation with Arab countries in areas such as artificial intelligence, energy, and trade. She said Beijing will work to make its relations with them a model for maintaining world peace and stability. China apparently aims to increase its influence in the Middle East as the United States continues to support Israel.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. On shortwave, they are now heard at 10 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp, as well as most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. All the times they announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, France 24. First, a press review from The Guardian, an investigation into a decade-long Israeli campaign of intimidation against prosecutors at the International Criminal Court. A press review about permafrost melting in Alaska, polluting 75 rivers. At the presidential election in Mexico this weekend, a woman president is likely to become the first in any North American country. Zelensky is visiting European nations, receiving 30 F-16 fighter jets from Belgium by 2028. Ukrainian military announced that there were upcoming military instructors from France arriving, and European nations are contemplating the revival of compulsory military service for young people, that is, the draft. France 24.
The Guardian has led an investigation into what looks like nearly a decade-long Israeli campaign of intimidation against prosecutors at the International Criminal Court.
That's quite right, Karis. So last week, after the ICC announced it would be seeking arrest warrants against Benjamin Netanyahu and his defense minister, the ICC prosecutor made a statement warning that all attempts to intimidate or influence himself or his colleagues must cease immediately. And it maybe wasn't very clear to us what that meant at the time, and this investigation maybe shed some light. Revelations suggest that apart from tapping the current head prosecutor, Karim Khan's phone calls, messages and emails, his predecessor was subject to a long-running campaign of intimidation by Mossad. Sources at the ICC likened it to stalking, what she experienced, telling The Guardian that the then chief of Mossad told her, "You should help us and let us take care of you. You don't want to be getting into things that could compromise your security or that of your family." Now, they say in the investigation that this campaign of intimidation began in 2015 after she had opened a preliminary investigation into crimes committed by individuals in Gaza, in the West Bank and in East Jerusalem.
An environment story. 75 rivers in Alaska have started running orange in recent years due to the melting of the permafrost. What can you tell us about this?
Smithsonian magazine that's got this story. Research shows that the colour change began as far back as 2008 and that as the permafrost melts, that's obviously one of the underground layers of the soil that remains at below freezing until it melts, of course. It contains all kinds of metals in its sediments, including iron, nickel and zinc. And as they are released, as they are melted, as they're exposed to the oxygen, they're, of course, have this reaction that creates this rusty colour. That's oxidised metal, that's rust. That's this orange we're recognising. In some of the waterways studied, the orange colour is so potent it can be seen from space. But it's not just an aesthetic problem, as macroinvertebrates are in decline in the rivers affected. That's things like insects, as well as biofilms. That's microorganisms. They're at the very bottom, at the very heart of the food chain. So this could rule out certain rivers as habitats for fish in the future. And of course, as research continues, there are concerns that will need to be looked into further about what this could do to the quality of drinking water to local residents.
Here we are in the Zocalo, which is the symbolic heart of Mexico's nation and its democracy. And it's where Claudia Sheinbaum a 61-year-old environmental engineer for the left-wing Morena Party, is closing her campaign with the hope of becoming the first female president in all of North America. She's finishing on a high with a 20-point lead in the polls over her rival Xochitl Galvez, but it has also been a political campaign season marked by violence, with 35 candidates running for different posts murdered and drug cartels as the chief suspects. This highlights one of the huge challenges she will face if she becomes president. But this close of campaign is a really festive atmosphere, so let's see how her supporters are feeling.
I'm happy and I'm here because I believe in this project. I used to be very skeptical with politics and I wouldn't vote, but she convinced me.
She's one of us. I mean, she knows our people. She's humble and she's not authoritarian like the people that led this country before.
Now, Claudia Sheinbaum has gained momentum with the popularity of the current president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, or AMLO, who's her mentor. We heard her promise to carry on his policies and, as she says, take them to the second level. Critics say she could be a puppet of AMLO, but she says firmly she will rule independently if on Sunday she is elected, as her supporters are saying, as the first presidenta of Mexico.
Well, tonight we're focusing on Ukraine and Europe's ongoing support for Kyiv as it fends off a Russian invasion. Earlier today, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was in Belgium as part of a diplomatic European tour designed to drum up renewed military support from allies. He is crisscrossing the continent as Russia continues its advance on the Kharkiv region. Now, during his visit to Brussels, President Zelensky locked in a commitment from Belgium to supply 30 F-16 fighter jets by 2028. Meanwhile, there are reports that military instructors from France could soon arrive in Ukraine. That word came from Kyiv's army chief, and it was quickly walked back by the French government, the defense ministry only confirming that the issue was being studied. Siobhan Silk has the details.
Around 50,000 Ukrainian soldiers have received training in EU countries. But as yet, no ally has sent instructors to Ukraine to conduct drills on the recruits' home soil. On Tuesday, EU Foreign Chief Josep Borrell said member states were split on the prospect. France's government was the first to suggest it might send boots on the ground. On the Telegram messaging app on Monday, the commander-in-chief of Ukraine's armed forces announced that France was indeed preparing to send military instructors to Ukraine. Alexander Sirsky said he'd already signed the documents that would allow the first French instructors to visit Ukrainian training centres and get acquainted with their infrastructure and personnel. But the French Defence Ministry later declined to confirm a deployment was imminent, saying only that it was being studied. Ukraine then backtracked, stating the deployment of trainers was still being discussed with France and other countries. The confusion comes as Ukrainian forces have been struggling to cope with renewed Russian pressure on the front line. On his EU visit this week, President Volodymyr Zelensky has got new pledges for military aid. But while hardware is one thing, manpower is another. Ukraine's counteroffensive continues to be hampered by a severe shortage of trained soldiers.
And all of this brings us to the question of reintroducing mandatory military service in Europe. With the war still raging in Ukraine, some EU members, namely Italy and Germany, are floating the idea of requiring young people to report for military service. Now, 9 members of the bloc already require some form of military service, including Austria and Denmark. But for the vast majority of EU members, such a requirement was done away with decades ago. For example, here in France, the government suspended the requirement back in 2001. Well, now, though, in Italy, Deputy Prime Minister Matteo Salvini's League Party has submitted a bill to the Chamber of Deputies proposing a mandatory 6-month period of military civilian service for all young people between the ages of 18 and 26. And Germany's main opposition party, the CDU, has put a gradual return to mandatory military service back on its agenda.
Those reports were from France 24. France 24 may be easily found at their website france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English. They're also available at most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the Shortwave Report or could help support this listener-funded program, you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. My online support information is available at outfarpress.com. Many thanks to everyone who has ever helped to keep this freely distributed show airborne. Please keep it up. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba, a report on the Israeli attack on a Palestinian tent camp in Rafah that was a designated safe camp. The UNRWA and most of the world condemned the attack and called on Israel to implement the measures called for by the ICJ, that's the International Court of Justice, last week. Brazilian President Lula da Silva withdrew his country's ambassador to Israel, supported by the Colombian President Petro, who has also removed his ambassador. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The Israeli military has carried out yet another heinous attack on the Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip in a nighttime airstrike on a tent camp in a designated safe zone in Zama. The military killed at least 50 people, including children. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society, the PRCS, said the dead include women and children, with many burned alive inside their tents. Gaza Civil Defense Agency said the airstrike set off a fire that tore through a displacement center in northwestern Rafah. Quote, "We saw charred bodies and dismembered limbs. We also saw cases of amputations, wounded children, women and the elderly," said the agency official Mohammed Al-Mughayir. The horrifying news sent shockwaves through the globe, prompting world leaders to call for the immediate implementation of a world court ruling to halt the regime's invasion. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani condemned the brutal massacre of the displaced Palestinians, calling for a practical response and strong condemnation from the international community. Quote, "It's not surprising that the terrorist regime of Israel, which one day bombs the lines of refugees waiting for aid and another day turns hospitals into blood and dust, has this time carried out a massive massacre of civilians, mostly women and children, by attacking the tents of Palestinians in Rafah." Numerous countries and global organizations have strongly condemned the Israeli air attack on tents housing displaced people in Gaza's southernmost city of Rafah that killed at least 50 Palestinians, including many children. The Palestinian presidency on Monday accused Israel of deliberately targeting civilians, joining a chorus of worldwide condemnation following the attack. Quote, "The perpetration of this heinous massacre by the Israeli occupational forces is a challenge to all international legitimacy resolutions," the Palestinian presidency said in a statement, accusing Israeli forces of deliberately targeting the tents of displaced people. In a statement on X, the United Nations Palestinian Refugee Agency, the UNRWA, said the images from Rafah are yet another testament that Gaza is hell on earth. Senior Hamas official Sami Abu Zuhri called the attack a massacre, holding the United States responsible for aiding Israel with weapons and money. Apparently feeling a need to cover up its crimes, Israel's top military prosecutor described the attack as very grave and said an investigation will be conducted. The details of the incident are still under investigation, which we are committed to conducting to the fullest extent, Major General Yifat Tomer Yerushalmi told a news conference, adding that the Israeli army regrets any harm to non-combatants during the war. Palestinian witnesses told Al Jazeera's fact-checking agency Sanad the camp sheltering civilians in Rafah's Tal al-Sudan area was deliberately targeted. The Rafah news agency, citing the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, the PRCS, said the dead included women and children, with many burned alive inside their tents. One of the residents who arrived in the Kuwaiti hospital in Rafah said the tents were melting and the people's bodies were also melting after the attack. Qatar condemned the Rafah attack as a grave violation of international law that will aggravate the humanitarian crisis in the besieged Gaza Strip. It said the attack could hinder mediation efforts to reach a ceasefire and hostage exchange deal, according to a statement from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Qatar, alongside the US and Egypt, has been engaged in months of talks aimed at securing a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Egypt condemned the deliberate bombardment. In a statement, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs called on Israel to, quote, implement the measures ordered by the International Court of Justice, ICJ, concerning an immediate cessation of military operations in Rafah. Spain's Foreign Minister José Manuel Álvarez said the bombing in Rafah was, quote, one more day with innocent Palestinian civilians being killed. He said the gravity of the attack is even larger because it comes after the ICJ order directing Israel to halt its operations in Rafah and the rest of Gaza. Ireland's Foreign Minister Michael Martin described the attack as barbaric. Quote, one cannot bomb an area like that without shocking consequences in terms of innocent children and civilians. We would urge Israel to stop now, in terms of the military operations in Rafah. Norway's Foreign Minister Espen Barth Eide said the attacks were a material breach of the decision of the highest court in the world. He added, we've had a compulsory order from the International Court of Justice ordering Israel to stop its attack on Rafah. It is compulsory. It is binding. The European Union's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, said Israel must abide by the ICJ ruling to stop its offensive in Rafah, as EU foreign ministers met their Arab counterparts in Brussels hours after. Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has withdrawn his country's ambassador to Israel after months of tension between the two countries over Israel's war on Gaza. The move was announced in Brazil's official Gazette on Wednesday. There was no immediate response from Israel. Lula has been a frequent critic of Israel's offensive in the besieged Gaza Strip, which he compared to the Holocaust this year. That led Israeli Foreign Minister Israel Katz to summon the Brazilian ambassador to the National Holocaust Museum in West Jerusalem for a public reprimand. Ambassador Federico Meyer has been transferred to Geneva and will join Brazil's permanent mission to the United Nations and other international organizations. Lula, a prominent voice for the Global South, whose country currently holds the rotating presidency of the G20, has faced pushback at home from far right over his Holocaust comments. However, he has received support elsewhere in Latin America, notably from Colombian President Gustavo Petro, who has also several ties with Israel. Both Brazil and Colombia have supported South Africa's complaint against Israel before the International Court of Justice in The Hague, alleging the Gaza assault amounts to a breach of the Genocide Convention.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You will have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link. And get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. While I'm recuperating from a spinal injury, I'm staying in a house that is connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.